backs it up on the other side. Anthony Beauvillier for the win. Score! Anthony Beauvillier with his third point of the game, and the Islanders win it 3-2.
Islanders country, hello. This is PT Isles, the Rise of Beauvillier edition. I'm Isles Box Joe Bono. A reminder, you can subscribe to this show and every Lighthouse Hockey podcast on iTunes. Please rate and review or find us on Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or over at lighthousehockey.com. Lighthouse Hockey, your SB Nation home for New York Islanders coverage. Coming up, I'll be joined by Rob Taub, a contributor for us over at Isles Blog, also covers the Devils for the Fischler Report. We'll get his thoughts on the Isles, the Metro Division, and where Taylor Hall will end up seems to change every day. But first, the Islanders were back on Coliseum ice on Saturday afternoon, a 1 p.m. start. It was Star Wars night slash day, and for the second straight home game, they win 3-2 in overtime. It was Devon Toews last Thursday versus Vegas, and yesterday it was Anthony Beauvillier with the game winner, his first career overtime goal. And Beauvillier really was the best player on the ice all game long. It was evident. It was obvious. Probably could have been the number one star even without that goal. The relentless forecheck throughout the game actually set up the Michael Dahl-Cole goal, the first of the game, with a tremendous job on the forecheck. Dahl-Cole, unfortunately, you know, had to come out. He did not come out for the second period of this game after taking a hit in the first. Really tough break for him. After picking up his second goal of the season after a long, long drought. But for Beauvillier, now 10 goals, 11 assists on the season. That's 21 points. He reached that mark on February 23rd last season. He does it on December the 14th. Here was the out-of-breath Beauvillier with Shannon Hogan after the game.
Well, Bo, what a thriller here this afternoon. Star Wars night, an exciting game against the Sabres. Take us through this overtime game winner from your perspective.
Sorry, I'm out of breath here, but it was just, I don't even know how to describe that. Lots of chasing, lots of trying to get the puck, and good stick there by Nelly and breakaway, and I just buried, so it's fun to get away with the win.
I feel like every time we're talking, we're here at the Coliseum. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Going into this matchup, so much conversation about two other players that were part of your draft class. Butch and Brendan talking about how you were the best player on the ice tonight as our number one star. How much pride do you take in having a game like this and also facilitating helping a team win?
It was just fun to play here. And, yeah, like I said before, I take a lot of pride in what I do and try to work hard every night. And playing this building, it's always fun.
You know, and last week we talked about Beauvillier's change in mentality that Arthur Staple had highlighted in The Athletic, removing the hoping to score from his game and recognizing that different ways to contribute, game in and game out. Here's what Barry Trotz had to say on Bo's continued development.
For last year, I think Bo went 20 or 21 games with really no production, and I let him try to work through it as a young player, and, you know, didn't take him out of the lineup when he wasn't producing. He wasn't really playing that well, but kept talking to him and showing him stuff and letting him try to figure that out, and I think he did, and he had a real productive year after that. And then he's, because of that experience, I think he's learning that, you know, there's going to be a game where you're not feeling it, so you can help in so many other ways, and he's done that, and he doesn't let himself get in his own way. Like young players always, I think they put so much on production that, you know, all the other stuff goes to the back burner, and when they're not producing, all the other stuff falls apart, and then they have no game, and they're wondering why they're not having success or not in the lineup. So I think he's figured that out. I think he's been surrounded by good players and good pros, just like all our young guys. So I think he's figured that out.
Great stuff from Barry Trotz, taking you back to last season for Anthony Beauvillier. And I think, you know, we sometimes forget how young some of these players are and how far along they are in their development. You know, when we look at a Matt Barzal and look at what he did his rookie year, you know, Barry talked about players getting caught up with the stat sheet and that type of production. I think we also do that as fans, but it's been great to see that Anthony Beauvillier last year, even though he wasn't producing and flat out not playing well at times, they stuck with him, kept on appealing to parts of his game where he can improve. He kept on listening, kept on working at it, and you're seeing the fruits of that more so here in 2019-2020 season. Now, the interesting subplot of this game developed in the third period between Matt Barzal and Rasmus Dahlin. Somewhat unusual, at least I felt so, that, you know, these two young players, not overly physical guys known to run hot, these very, you know, very bright young stars, they were the ones feuding with each other. And it went on for several shifts. And, you know, at one point in that third period, you could actually see Islanders assistant coaches trying to calm Barzy down. And he was nodding along, like, very quickly, that he knew that it was kind of getting under his skin here with what was going on between him and Dahlin. But then, you know, he's unable to let it go. And then on a shift late in the third period, he leaves his feet, takes an absolutely brutal, inexcusable penalty that, you know, ultimately leads to the Jack Eichel goal after the Sabres pull the goalie and ties the game at two. And Barry Trotz, as you can imagine, was not pleased at all by that undisciplined play by Matt Barzal.
We were doing the right things. We got the lead, and we're pretty comfortable with the lead. And then we took an unnecessary penalty. That's unacceptable. That was we pride ourselves on team first. That wasn't a team first. That was personal.
So a teachable moment for Matt Barzal, and probably a teachable moment for the other young players on the team, to show that, listen, this is a team first organization. You can't put yourself and anything that you got going on personal above the team. You know, there are certain types of penalties that players take sometimes to defend a teammate. Josh Bailey did earlier in the game in defense of Ross Johnson. The Islanders had to kill a penalty there at the end of the first period and then into the second because of it. They were due it. That's a good type of penalty. That is a team first type of penalty. This certainly was not by Matt Barzal. Now, myself and other people, after this happened, knowing what Barry Trotz has done, and even earlier in the season, he did this with Brock Nelson after he took a couple penalties in a period, that he's known to sit guys, right? If you're going to take those kind of undisciplined type penalties. Of course, it meant that the 3-on-3 overtime was coming up with Barzal, who's dominant at times on the 3-on-3 in overtime. Would he sit him? He was asked the question. Here was his lengthy response.
Absolutely. You want to have accountability, but also, you know, there's an opportunity for him to, you know, he's a pretty good 3-on-3. Where he, you know, he can dominate a shift, and he did that, and we almost, you know, you can make up for it a little bit, but you don't want to give anybody, as I said to the team afterwards, you don't want to give another team a point. You know, maybe they pull their goalie and they score, and I don't know that, but you knew that they were going to pull their goalie probably after the first minute, and then, you know, you'd be 6-on-4, and now you got guys having to be out there blocking shots. You just don't know, you know. You guys are selling out. We got such committed guys, especially on the penalty kill, like Casey and Clutter and Pelle and you guys like Mayfield and Johnny, that, you know, they're selling out everything. And, you know, you take one off the foot or, you know, somewhere off the hand, and all of a sudden you're out for 6 weeks because you took an unnecessary penalty. So I think he recognizes that. That'll be a learning moment. I will guarantee you if it happens again, he'll have a long sit for sure. And that is not just one player. That's everybody. That's we don't need that in our game.
So great stuff there for Barry Trotz, and he took it somewhere that I wasn't thinking. The idea of, hey, that penalty, not only did it end up tying the game and possibly costing the Islanders a point, it put his teammates in a vulnerable position because these are guys that sell out. They're going to do anything to try to preserve the lead. That penalty could lead to someone taking a puck off of a foot or off a hand and lead to an injury. You know, this is what separates, I guess, Barry Trotz from maybe the casual fan and maybe even other coaches, is that he brings it to that level. Not only did that penalty cost us potentially the game, you may have put your teammate in a vulnerable position that they're trying to bail you out, and by doing so, you know, they're going to take a puck to the feed. They're going to be bruised. They're going to be battered. Things that might happen, and maybe forced to lose time. So he took it to that point where, you know, it's going to hopefully become a very teachable and memorable moment for Matt Barzal, and again the other players as well. He's not going to use this and just make it about Matt. He's going to use it as a way to talk to everyone on that team up and down the lineup, and I'm certainly he did after the game. But the Islanders get the win. Now 22-7-2 on the year, third straight victory after those wins at Tampa 5-2 and then 3-1 victory against the Florida Panthers. Really impressive for the Islanders to bounce back after the 3-1 loss against the Dallas Stars, a game where, you know, the score was 3-0, and then obviously the Stars were able to capitalize on power play chances. Matt Barzal was in the box for a couple of those as well. But the Islanders, like they continue to do against Barry Trotz, you have a little bit of a blip. You look ahead at the schedule and go, oh, you know, they can drop two or three in a row here, and it just does not happen. They just keep on winning, but so do the Washington Capitals. Islanders now 7 points behind the Capitals, who won again. They are now 8-1-1 in their last 10 games. Three games at hand on the Islanders, but do have a 7-game lead in the standings. Islanders creating a little bit of breathing room right now between them and the Carolina Hurricanes and Pittsburgh Penguins, both played two more games and are 6 points back. We'll take a break. When we come back, Rob Taub joins us to talk about the Islanders and the NHL. You're listening to PT Isles on the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. We're back, PT Isles, Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network, and I'm now joined by a writer for us over at Isles Blog, nyislesblog.com, and also covers the New Jersey Devils for the Fischler Report. That's Rob Taub. Rob, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Joe. How are you?
And I appreciate you joining us. I know you have a very special brunch later on today before you get to settle in and watch some football.
Yeah, I got my mom's 60th birthday. Her birthday's not till December 23rd, but she wanted to get everyone all involved today, so she's having a little party. So
no surprise, this was her idea. And is she as big of an Islander fan as the rest of the Tao family?
Pretty much, yeah. She goes to as many games she can. She does not like Brooklyn, so that's how you know that she's a Tao.
And right now, if you're going to Islander games in person, chances are you're going to see a victory. Islanders continue to be dominant at home. This has been an unbelievable stretch on home ice.
Absolutely. They're a different animal on home ice. They just seem like they're so – even when they don't – like even like yesterday when they didn't have it, like for that full 60 like you expect, like when they play at home, they come away with a win. They're finding ways to win. It's been fun to watch. You know, you're starting to see the Coliseum. There's starting to be bigger crowds. I think what happened early in the season, I think, you know, there were so many other things to do going on, like during game nights. It was still warm out. Now that's starting to get a little bit colder, a little bit, you know, more people want to be inside. I think the crowds are starting to show out. I think you're going to start seeing some big sellouts, I think, over the next, hopefully over the next 2 or 3 months, and then hopefully into the playoffs. But look, it's been a hell of a run. You know, 63 days, considering this morning without a home loss, it's absurd. It's absurd. And the way they won it every single way possible at home, which has been even more entertaining to watch, because there's been games where they've dominated from start to finish. There's been games where they pulled out of the seat of their pants. And there's been games where it's just been hard-fought, exciting hockey, like the game against Vegas, which I thought was probably the most entertaining game I watched all season.
And also what's absurd is that the fact that the Islanders, despite having 46 points through 31 games, are 7 points back in the division, although they do have 3 games in hand against the Washington Capitals. And the rest of this Metropolitan Division, Rob, you get to see a lot of these teams up close and personal with not only attending Islander games, but the work you do covering the Devils. This Metropolitan Division, I mean, you have the Flyers right now in fifth place with 39 points.
I know.
You know, Islanders are putting themselves in a really good position when it comes to playoff probability. Even the most unfriendly of type of models have them 85-90% probability in the playoffs, and they should be considering where they're projected. But you got about 4 teams in this division right now projected to get 100 points.
Yeah, it's a very good division. I think the Flyers, they've taken a huge step with Alain Vigneault as coach. I know the thing with Oscar Lindbaum, you know, hopefully doesn't, you know, throw a wrench into their plans. I have, you know, all the prayers to him. You know, you got the Penguins, who are starting to find their game. Tristan Jarry's been like their goaltender. He's been carrying them. Like they're still hammered by injuries here and there, but they're the Penguins still. You still got Malkin, still got Crosby, you got Letang, the usual suspects. Carolina, I want to see what's going to happen with Carolina when the Islanders play them, because they haven't played. The last time they played them was early in the season, and the Islanders, you know, they look like a team that couldn't compete with them. So Carolina, they're just hanging around, waiting to make their move. You got the Rangers. Look, they're in rebuilding, and, you know, they blew another lead yesterday. What I think of the Rangers, I don't think they're on the Islanders' level yet in any way possible. I think that they're a growing team. I think they're an exciting team, but they remind me of the Islanders underdog weight where they can score, they have great offense, but their defense is just awful. And their goaltending, look, Georgiev and Lundqvist, they've done a great job. I really wonder when they're going to start to transition to make Georgiev the starter. Who knows where that's going to be. Maybe they'll trade Lundqvist. I don't know. But, you know, that's going on there. And then we'll transition into Jersey. We only have to go to Columbus because we know how bad they are. It's tough to watch after they took their shot last year with Jersey. You know, the whole Taylor Hall situation. I wouldn't say I've been there front and center, but I was really there when it really started to heat up after the Ranger game. I was in the double locker room when they lost 4-0 and they were 0-8 on the power play. And I was right next to Hall when someone asked him about those trade rumors, and someone misguided the question, and you could see the frustration was literally, he was red hot. He was heated. And I think that's where things started to you started to see now there's going to be some not so steady, not so fun times. And it's been like that the past few weeks. So it's a good division. I think the Islanders have, like you said, they put themselves in great position. And we'll see where it goes from here. If they keep playing like the way they do, they should be right up there with Washington. Washington, they just seem like they're on another level too. But the Islanders are keeping pace, and they still have games in hand, like you said. So it's going to be fun to watch down the stretch.
We'll go back to the Islanders in a moment, but just to stay on the Taylor Hall sweepstakes for a little longer. I mean, every day it seems like there's a different team that's the front runner for him. It seemed like he was going to go to Colorado. Then there were some really credible reporters yesterday saying that working towards a deal with the Arizona Coyotes. Obviously, Islander fans, you know, Taylor Hall has been an infatuation ever since the rumors of Travis Hamonic for Hall several years ago. And, you know, he would be a go-for-it-type player, but it's hard to imagine that the Devils would trade with the Islanders in division, even though this could be a rental. I think it would even be maybe harder for the Islanders to do, considering the pieces that they may have to send in division to get a player like Taylor Hall.
Absolutely. And I've kind of come to the conclusion that, and some people have disagreed with me when I've talked to them about it, I want to see the Islanders take their shot at Hall in the offseason. That way you don't lose any pieces and you throw all your chips into the middle. I've gotten a lot of feedback saying, you know, this is their they should take it now. Like, this is their time. This is their window. They should go after Hall's best thing. But you know what? In division trades, they don't happen. And it would be so out of left field for Ray Shiro, who I don't really know that much, but you know, I've been around and seen how he runs the Devils. I do not see him trading in division. That would you're just asking to make your division opponent even better and even stronger for the future. Even if he doesn't sign, the Islanders still have to play. They have to play the Devils. They haven't played the Devils yet, so they're going to play them three times. And
from my perspective, though, the Devils, I don't think they should be concerned with losing games the rest of the season. You know, they can go try to get the number one pick again come lottery time.
I think they're on their way there.
I mean, I think it's more about, you know, if you're an Islander fan, you know, any type of call that the Islanders are going to take when it comes to not only players like Hall, but even some of the other scorers that are being talked about in the trade market.
Right.
Every GM is going to ask for Noah Dobson right up the bat. Right. So what type of prospect are you going to be willing to give up? Because, you know, if you want to talk about being upset, what if Taylor Hall comes to the Islanders have a nice run, but don't win a Stanley Cup. And then you have to watch Noah Dobson or Oliver Wahlstrom or whomever else in a Devil uniform for the next 6, 7, 8 years. That would not be fun.
No, it wouldn't be fun. And you know what? I don't think they would trade Noah Dobson. I think the Islanders, with the plan that they had with Dobson this year. And look, if they were going to trade him, I think they might have would have done it already. I think they see him. The organization sees him as their next great defenseman. And we're starting to see little inklings of that now that he's starting a little bit more playing time. I think now that he's getting a little bit more playing time, we're getting to see like what he's actually capable of. I don't think it starts with Dobson. I think Dobson's off limits. I think Oliver Wahlstrom's off limits. I think those are the two guys from that draft a year and a half ago that's what the organization is going to build their future on, even though they have pieces in place with Nelson and Everly and Barzell. Those are the two guys because, you know, you got a lot of veterans on this team who are getting older and their contracts are not going to be here that much longer. I don't want to throw out a Matt Martin, but Johnny Boychuk's not going to be here that much longer. Who knows how long Nick Leddy is going to be here? Who knows how, like, those type of guys. So replacing those, giving up a guy like Dobson or Wahlstrom, and I know it's a quick fix, and if you're taking your shot for a Stanley Cup, I completely get it, but I've kind of come to the conclusion where they're building. And this is a team. This is a team now run by probably, I think, the best management in the NHL with Trotz and Lamoriello at the helm. They wanted to build. That's been the sole message since they got here. They want to build, and they're building, and you're seeing it little by little. And I think even in Bridgeport, you're now seeing it even with Kiefer Bellows, who I think if you're going to make a trade, that's the guy I think you start with first, and then you go down the list to Wild and whoever you want to go, and then draft picks or whatever. But I think right now, I think let this team build. They're building something not to be sustained for the next 1 or 2 years. They're building something to be sustained for the next 4, 5, 6, maybe even a whole decade. So I don't know. I do not want to see them trade Dobson. I don't want to see them deal Wahlstrom, even though
Terrell Hall would break. Neither do I. Neither do any Islander fans. I'm just saying, you know, opposing GMs are going to start with your top prospect. It's going to be hard.
Oh, of course.
It's going to be hard to sell to the Devils fan base or whomever else the Islanders make a trade with that we got their,
right,
you know, fourth or fifth best prospect. And even
it's
if these prospects
fit
on another, in another
right
organization, could be higher up on the list, right? So, but I think it's important. You mentioned Kiefer Bellows. Seeing these other type of players gain some, you know, stock and credibility back, you know, that could be a piece that maybe can be moved by Lou Lamoriello, who, you know, I don't know the exact amount of days. I know you like to be the one that goes back and count the days, how many days it's been since the Matt Martin trade. So we'll see, because
I don't even, you know, it's funny. I don't even know.
It's a long time.
I lost track. Yeah.
Yeah, but if they're in a similar type of position and that they were in last season, and last year may have been a year earlier than expected, but, you know, you're going to want to, you know, progress to the second round and beyond this year. So, you know, you read these articles about maybe the best options are still from within. Maybe that's true. Maybe Wahlstrom comes back for a second round and is able to be an offensive spark right away. But it's going to be fascinating what they do or don't do at the deadline.
I'll give you a bold prediction. Even when I don't like predictions, I think he goes to a Western Conference team. And I don't think it's the Colorado Avalanche. I think someone else is going to come out of the woodwork. Maybe even like, I don't know, Calgary or Edmonton. I think to see him go back to Edmonton would just be the storyline of all storylines. It really would be. But I don't think it's going to be an Eastern Conference team. I think it's going to be a Western Conference team.
Rob Taub, contributor for us over at Islesbog and covers the Devils for the Fischler Report, is our guest. Follow him on Twitter at rtaub_. And let's just get back to this Islander team right now, because, you know, one of the most, you know, consistent things about a Barry Trotz-led team is that when they have a little hiccup, they fix it, and then they find a way. And still, as a fan of this team, you know, they have a 3-1 loss at Dallas, and then you're looking ahead at the schedule, and you're going, they had to go to Tampa, and, you know, Tampa's going to want revenge from losing that game earlier in the year. And then, 5-2 win. Oh, then, you know, the back-to-back with Florida, you know, they've beaten Florida twice. It's difficult to beat a team 3 straight times. And they win in Florida. And this is what happens. And it's been happening now since last season. Well, you see a schedule, they have the bad loss, and you go, can this be the spot where they lose 2 or 3 games in a row, where they start to have a couple hiccups, and it just doesn't seem to come? Really impressive, the back-to-back wins in Florida against the Lightning and the Panthers.
Absolutely. And, you know, I tweeted it before, I think, the Tampa game, and I knew it going also into the Florida. Those are two places that over these last 5 years, they do not win down there. They have so much trouble just coming away with points down there. So it was great to see them come away with 4 points. But yeah, I think that both those games after the Dallas game, which I thought it was a pretty good, I thought they played a pretty good game. I thought the first period that those two goals from that deflect, those two power play goals, I think the power, like Barry said, the power play really, the penalty kill really hurt them. And it kind of got there, like they had to like work their way back the entire game. And it was, by the time it happened, it was too late. But the two Florida games, I thought they were great responses. I thought they played really well. I thought it was probably their two best road games of the season, considering, and I got a lot of flack for this on Twitter. I said that I don't think this team has been a great road team. I know the points say different, but I look at their performance instead of the points, and I look at some of the games that they won where they probably shouldn't have won, and I look at the games they lost that they probably should have won, the games that they lost that they probably should have won, like vice versa. But those two games, great efforts. I think now maybe you're going to start to see that little bit of swagger. They look like they were playing with swagger on the road again, and that it's great to see, because the challenge is not going to get any easier over the next few months. Especially you got another Western road swing. You're going to start to be going up against more like of your division opponents. So it's not going to get any easier. But we saw that, like it was last year with this team. It took them a little while, but they were really good. They were a great road team. Like, they were probably one of the best road teams in the NHL last year. So I think now that at those two games that we saw this week, it's starting to transfer over, that we're going to start to see them really like kick it into gear on the road. And I think that's where we were going to talk about it in a little bit. One of my articles, I said we haven't seen the best of this team yet. That was one of the things I forgot to write. That was one of the things I forgot to put in, was we haven't seen the best of this team on the road. We've seen the best of them at home. We've seen what they're capable of. On the road, though, it's been, you know, here or there. There's been good games. There's been bad games. Yes, they come away with points, like we just said, but there's still another level they could take it to.
And something else you'd love to see, not only the way they played on the road, but both in the game against Florida and then yesterday at the Coliseum, is that this team stands up for one another. You had the Adam Pelech hit, and Andrews Lee got 17 minutes worth of penalties after standing up for his teammate, but then finished off the Gordie Howe hat trick with the empty net goal. And then Josh Bailey, you know, Rosh Johnson's usually the one delivering hits. Takes a hit, goes into the boards, a little shaky coming up, and you know, Josh Bailey. And listen, the Islanders ended up having to give up a power play. They were able to kill that one, but you know, you'll take, you know, unlike some of the bad penalties, like the Matt Barzal penalty late in the game, those are ones that Barry Trotz lived with. And those are ones that, you know, mean so much to the rest of the guys in those rooms to see, you know, the Lees and the Baileys. And you remember back to that game against the Red Wings last year where they stuck up after a big hit, and the team kind of got going right after that. So this has been another calling card for a Barry Trotz-led team. They really stick up for each other.
Absolutely. It's team first. It's the, like we were saying before, it's that building process. They're building a foundation, and that foundation includes being team first, no one above the rest, no one person above the rest. Everyone has their job. Everyone does their job, and it leads to them winning. This is the, you have to admit, like, even like they stand up for it, but this is the most winning any, probably half of the generation of these Islander fans have seen in forever. There's a new generation of Islander fans where they, like me and you, we didn't get to experience this years ago in the early 2000s or even in the early part of this decade. There's a generation of Islander fans.
I was around. No. But remember, they had 1 year that year that they finished fifth in the conference, and then they snuck into the playoffs the next few years in the eighth seed. So this is a different degree of level of winning.
Absolutely. And it's so enjoyable. It really is, because we waited – so many fans waited so long for them to finally – I wouldn't say get back to where they should be, not saying winning cups, but just respectability and being, you know, being respected around the league. Like, the, you only go back a few years ago, this team was being talked about as one of, like, there was no accountability, which that word, you know, I want to get that tattooed on my forehead, because it's probably one of the most important words that has revolved around the Islanders past years. But there was, like, everyone thought they were a joke. And even after the whole Panarin saga back in the offseason, people thought they were a joke. They're not a joke anymore. And the performance on the ice reflects it. And it's the team first mentality that reflects it. There are not many teams that you'll find around in this league that will go this hard for each other. And I've seen firsthand. It's been a very enjoyable to watch, and I'm looking forward to seeing it for, you know, however long it goes, whether it's till, you know, next year or for the next 10 years.
So, Rob, you alluded to it. You wrote an article about that, the best of the Islanders we have yet to see this season. And again, that's, I understand that. It's hard for people to understand that, though, considering 17 points and look at the goalie rotation, how well Greiss and Varlamov have been, and Matt Barzal being a shoot-first scorer, and the emergence of players like Anthony Beauvillier and the defensive core continuing to mature. All these things are happening, yet you still feel like there's room to grow. Explain.
Absolutely. Well, I go by what Trotz has to say most of the time, that there is always room to grow. Thing with, like, a lot of people now, when watching this team, I look at it a different way than I think a lot of people, where now that they have real coaching and they have actual players that know what they're doing and they're all good in their roles, I take it game by game with this team. I don't try and look ahead toward the future. I don't want to try and look. I just try and take it day by day. But looking at, like, I kind of, you know, went against my morals there by saying that they can't, like, there is another level they can take it to, because there's always another level. Like, they're as good as any team in the National Hockey League right now. Someone maybe consider them the best runner, the best, like, you know, on a nightly basis where they continue to get points. But I think the reason I wrote that, it's not even about team performance. It's individual. There's definitely some things that still I can see happening, And one of them I said was Ryan Pulock and Devon Toews, like really, really kick it into gear. I think they've had a look. They've had good years so far, but I think those two have elite potential, especially Toews. I thought when we watched Toews last year, and I was like, this guy could be, you know, he could be a potential number one all-star defenseman over the next, you know, 5-10 years. So I still think there's another level they could take it to. I think that, you know, even this four, I mentioned the Andersley and Jordan Eberle, who are starting to really come on as of late. And now, you know, those guys, where I know they had tough starts at the beginning of the season, but there's another level they could take it to. And, you know, the Islands have been beneficial by not really being unhealthy this year. Has there been a few, you know, spurts where they, you know, you're missing Matt Martin, missing Tom Pounakal, missing Eberle, you know, for almost a month. But people came up in their places and, you know, did their roles to a T and, you know, made the most of them. I'm saying that once everyone is on the same page, once the offense is going, and look, the offense is much better than it was last year. They're averaging 3 goals a game, which, you know, no one expected after what they did last year because of how defensive they played. But I think there's another level for a lot of these guys to take it to. I think Anthony Bevilia can be an all-star this year. I think Brock Nelson to be a 60-point guy, the guy they expected him to be. I think Barzell, I know he's leading the team right now in points. I think he could take it to another level and try and go for, like, get toward his rookie year, you know, really put up that 85, 90 points if, you know, if it's possible. And even the goaltending, I kind of pointed out that Thomas Greiss, he was having a rough couple games. He had a rough couple games. He was giving up 3 goals a game. Not all of it was his fault, but you don't want to see that. And then the bounce back performance he had on Thursday, which was great. I think now maybe it's back. He's, you know, back in a rhythm. And I just, yeah, I think there's another level that this team could take it to.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. There, you can point to a number of players and feel like they still have room to grow and as players, and that you have confidence with Barry Trotz being the coach behind the bench that they'll get there. And you look at Anthony Beauvillier and the maturity and the jump from last year to this year. And, you know, if you can expect other players to make similar type of jumps along with some of the streaky players to get on hot streaks that have been kind of cold, I see where you're getting at. We'll just hope this team doesn't peak too soon this year. And it all happens come around the springtime.
I don't think they peak too soon. And I'll tell you why, because I feel like in that winning streak, I think that's where we could have saw like the beginning of the end, the way it ended in like LA and in Anaheim, and you're like, oh, maybe they can't sustain it, but they just, it's all about the coaching, and they're because they're so in tune to their system and their jobs. I don't think they peaked yet. I think that we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg of what this team is capable of. Like I said earlier, there's games that are coming up. You got Boston, games against Boston and Washington. Those are going to be what's called measuring stick games that they have to win. If they win those games, that's taking it to that level and not peaking early. That means that you're going to be ready. You're going to be fresh for the playoffs and hopefully ready for a long playoff run.
Well, Rob, we appreciate a few minutes here today. Have a great time at your family brunch. Happy 60th birthday to Mama Taub, and we'll talk soon.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it. Have a good Sunday.
We're back, and I wanted to just highlight some numbers here following the 3-2 overtime win at the Coliseum. It has been the return of Fort Neverlose. We talked about it with Rob. The home game point streak now at 13, an 8-game winning streak at the Coliseum, and a 6-game home winning streak overall between Barclays and the Barn. Look at this stat. The Islanders yesterday tied a franchise mark by winning 73% of their faceoffs on Saturday. So pretty remarkable, a team that, you know, especially the first part of the year, were struggling in the faceoff department to put up that high of a number, 73% of their faceoffs won on Saturday. That would be a great trend for this team to continue. Going back a few nights, Andersley, of course, picked up that Gordie Howe hat trick against the Florida Panthers. The most recent Islander to achieve that feat was actually not too long ago, Scott Mayfield, back on November 7th, 2017. Kyle Oposo did it in 2014, back in January of that year. But before the Oposo Gordie Howe hat trick, you have to go way back. 1986, Dennis Poffin on January 30th in an 8-4 win over the Flyers. His goal that game actually came shorthanded, and looking at the box score, they led the Flyers 5-0 in the first period that night. So a fun box score to go check out. Now, before we go, I wanted to just play something that I personally got a kick out of. The Islanders have done these great segments as part of their intermission when they had the guys back for Alumni Weekend, pairing up a couple older players and just recording them having a conversation. And the Mick Vokoda, Darius Kasparaitis ones have been very funny. I think the most recent installment, you know, Mick talking about, you know, when you came over as a rookie from Russia, you know, when was the moment when you felt like you were going to be able to make it as a pro? And Kasparaitis says, when I saw you and Rich Pilon skating is when I knew I'd be okay. Really funny moment there. But Benoit Hogan, Pierre Turgeon were together. And, of course, these guys played together a long, long time in Buffalo with the Islanders and then later on in their careers with the Dallas Stars, both traded as very young players from the Sabres to the Island. And this is why Pierre Turgeon was pretty ticked off when that happened.
You were on the ice before practice, skating around before the practice started.
Exactly.
And next thing you know is came out to the locker room, saw you, we talked, and we were traded.
I was kind of happy after. I'm like, you know, Buffalo wasn't really working out, but I think a little change was great. I know you weren't happy.
No, I wasn't happy.
Yeah, well, you know, we bought homes there.
Yeah.
And Buffalo in the same neighborhood.
Yeah, put a brand new pool.
Yeah,
brand
new
pool. Just...
I didn't a month
before, I just put a pool in, and the month after, gets traded.
So Pierre Turgeon learning a lesson hard there. Don't put pools in Buffalo, New York. But I'm sure Lee, I think he was 21, 22 years old at the time, had already been scoring 40 goals, cornerstone of the franchise, former top overall pick, and he gets traded, of course, for a future Hall of Famer in Pat LaFontaine. But pretty funny there, because I'd be pretty ticked off, too, if I just spent a lot of money and all the work, permitting, and everything you got to do to put a pool in your home and then get traded to Long Island. There really also a couple of other moments in this interview between these two ex-Islanders. One talking about what we hear all the time, that – you know, getting traded to Long Island, they didn't know anything about this area outside of the Marriott and the arena, and not much else. And Benoit Hoke says, you know, they told him he was getting traded to New York, and he, you know, thought the Rangers, and then they told him the Islanders, and he ended up spending months just at the Marriott for a while. But ultimately, he became a guy who loved the water, who loved boating, who loved fishing, and just how beautiful and Long Island can be as a professional athlete living there. And I would hope that's not the case anymore, that players don't know how great it is to live and play on Long Island, you know, especially at the income levels that these guys are at. Who knows, though? Maybe especially when talking about players who are not from the U.S., they're from Europe or Canada, maybe they still have no idea about Long Island. I guess in future years, they'll be traveling from a hotel to Belmont, so they'll see a little bit more of it than they did from the Marriott to the Coliseum days. But yeah, you would hope that kind of stigma is over here in 2019, but it certainly did still exist very much so back in 1990, 1991. One more clip I want to play before we head out. I have an affinity for the 1993 Islanders team. That was the first season I really followed hockey and fell in love with the Islanders, and obviously a memorable run to the conference finals. And, you know, because they've been like that team has been the one blip of success for so long in between playoff series wins, I think they've been elevated to a heightened level, you know, despite the fact that they got knocked out in five games in a conference finals. And listen, that happens all the time, but they've held a very special place in my heart personally. And here's Pierre Turgeon and Benoit Hogue reminiscing about that season on the Island.
We came in 91. It was like the tough first year, but after we picked up the team all the way to 93, great run.
And all the experience we had with Al coming in and just the story.
That was fun.
Listen, and learning, too.
We're
learning.
Mostly in our mid-20s. I was 25 when I came to the Islanders, and man, the group that we had, even today.
We didn't win the Stanley Cup, but I guess it feels like we did. You know what I mean?
Oh,
just the fact how close we were and tight we were, and it started with Al, really.
Yeah.
Al, you know, you had Pat Sadlee as a captain that brought us together to the same time. The locker room was fun, always something you keep busy. There was something you had to keep your eyes open.
The fans were great, too.
Fans were awesome.
The fans were awesome. Yeah. It was a good time.
Incredible.
A great line there from Pierre Turgeon. We didn't win the Stanley Cup, but it feels like we did. because those players on that team are forever linked to each other. There's a connection there. There was a connection at the time, and it's obviously continued throughout the years. And, you know, for me, you know, there's certain rosters of Islander hockey that you have to maybe go back on Hockey Reference and you go, oh, yeah, I forgot about him. I forgot about this player, et cetera. That 93 team, you can, you know, you could rattle off up and down the lineup, at least for me and maybe for a whole lot of Islander fans that are around the similar age, late 30s, early 40s, that you grew up with them in your early to mid to late teen years. So that'll do it for another episode of PT Isles. Next up for the Islanders, they host the Nashville Predators on Tuesday night. Then they head to Boston. Talk about a game I'd really like to see them win. Talk about a statement game at this point of the season. If they were able to go into Boston, a team that gives them fits, and beat the Bruins on Thursday night, that would be another proving people wrong again type step. And then they return home to the Coliseum, a holiday matinee, December 21st, against the Anaheim Ducks. Don't forget to hear the latest updates on this show and all Lighthouse Hockey podcasts, to follow us on Twitter at LHH Podcast. Big live show coming up at the Offside Tavern, January the 4th. Dan and Noel will be recording the Isles Buzz podcast live from there. Congratulations, guys, on your new logo, by the way. Very, very nice. And I heard Dan Saraceni is going to be in attendance, and I might be there as well. So I hope to see a lot of you guys at Offside Tavern on January the 4th. We'll talk to you next week, Islanders Country. Good night.